2-minute meditation. Serenity Prayer, God.
Grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay. I want to thank all of you for toughing it out. All of you that came from out of town, that's awesome. Thank you. It's great to see you guys. I know we see each other on our video call on Sundays. I think what we're going to do this session is we're going to bounce around steps 10, 11, and 12. And then we'll do a Q&A at the end of the session if you have any questions. And we're going to call it a wrap after that. Everybody okay with that?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Brandon, I don't know if I've ever seen somebody listen to someone cover steps 4 through 9 in 30 minutes. It's pretty impressive. he did a masterful job of really taking you to the meat of it all, and this it's almost like steps 4 through 9 are a purification process. I was reading a book last week where the guy's talking about we need to do our utmost to go to God in step 11 clean, and then our desire to be clean will be a catalyst for the power and how it changes us and cleanses us. But people hear the word purification and you know, our minds sometimes go straight to this idea that it has something to do with religion. But if you really think about it, we're getting clean of the past. We're actually changing the past to a degree. When we write inventory and we're forced to, you know, look at it from an entirely different angle, we're gonna look at the first three columns, which we've done our entire lives, why I'm angry, who I'm angry at, and how it affected me. But then they do something totally out of left field for most of us. I never set aside entirely what the other person or institution had done and only looked at my mistakes and where I was at fault. And in our sponsorship family, we were taught not to use the word part. I'm looking for my part, because if I have a part, the other person has a part, and the other person's part's always going to be bigger than my part. I'm sure they're more to blame. And so we don't look at parts. We just set aside entirely, and we just look at what the other person did, and we look for our own mistakes and our own, you know, faults in the situation. And that begins a new process of thinking. And then if you go back into the past, it starts to change the meaning, especially when you start sponsoring people. And I think Brandon gave a really good example of it with his sponsees. You start to see what you thought was once a liability and a really horrible experience and a very dark experience. You're not using it to connect and bond with another human being and help them on their journey. And so now the past has a new meaning. And so when we are able to look in the past and give it a new meaning, it gets reframed in our psychology. And so in essence, the past has now changed. Pretty wild. And so we go through that process. We start taking all these new actions that contradict the way we've lived our lives. And at our core, we don't want to do, you know. I remember the early days. Occasionally, somebody would ask me to do something, and you know, back then, you don't say no to any AA requests or CA requests, and you find yourself not wanting to do something, but you're doing it. And those actions were repeatedly taken, and then I realized how much purpose I found in being a servant. You know, this is the only society on the planet where you come in a big shot and you work your way up to servant, and that's the goal. Does not go well with the outside world. It contradicts it. And so with that coupled with now going to God in 6 and 7 and all my brokenness with all the egg on my face, and I'm saying, God, I can't change myself. I don't know what's useful. I don't know what's not useful. All I do know is that I'm coming to you again like I did in the third step, and I want you to do something with me. Just do what you're going to do. You know, steps 6 and 7 are the whole game. The whole thing, the entire book. Brandon mentioned how there are two small little paragraphs. Well, I mean, this morning we covered 60 to 62. Here you go, man. That's all the information you really need. But the whole thing's about 6 and 7. And then we get into the reconstruction. A long period of reconstruction lies ahead for us. One common thread I have found with every single person, excluding none, that have relapsed, unfinished amends. Common denominator with every single one. Don't know if that was the catalyst, but it's present. And so we must endeavor to clean up the wreckage of our past. And there's now going into step 10, knowing there's nothing pulling me from the past. And then there's step 10 where you know there's a lot of stuff pulling you from the past. And so it's extremely difficult. Now, in my first year and a half, I thought step 10 was a spot check inventory only. Throughout the course of the day, I get resentful, I get self-pity, I'm driven, and what I do is I stop and I look at steps 4 through 9 real quick, I take a quick inventory, I maybe discuss it with someone, I see the defect of character, did I harm anybody, I make amends, I move on. But then, of course, I get exposed to this man, Mark Houston, and he's talking about the 10th step in a way that I have never heard, and I am a big book guy. And it was fascinating to me. It says this thought of making amends brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously, with energy, commence this way of living as we clean up the past. We've entered the world of the spirit. Important question, what is your experience in the world? What is the world of the spirit? It's an important question. Being of service, self-examination, prayer, meditation, contemplation, intimate self-disclosure, seeing the connectedness of the world and the events that take place in our lives. It's important to spend some time with that question. Our next function, and the definition of function is an interesting one, our next expected duty. Our next expected duty is to grow in understanding, I believe, understanding the spiritual realm and being effective in this realm. It says this is not an overnight matter. It should continue as we move along in our lifetime. What are we going to do? We're going to watch. We're going to watch. We're going to witness. What are we paying attention for? What are we trying to notice? The selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment and fear. When these crop up, at once I begin a dialogue with my higher power. The next instruction is we discuss with immediately with someone and make amends quickly. That is the last instruction I give to the guys I work with, because we're trying to build a program based on God reliance, not self reliance. And to me, making a phone call every single time had hints of self reliance. You know, it's got to be a pretty severe circumstance in my life for me to need to make a 10 step call and get another perspective. Typically, my watching, my asking, my turning, the turn back to the present moment. Turn back to the present moment. It says turn our thoughts. I did that for years. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Call one of the guys I sponsor. See how they're doing. and we try to practice this code of love and tolerance, and we stop fighting. And if we do these things, we will find that we recoil from drugs and alcohol as if from a hot flame. And we experience this thing called the position of neutrality, but this is all based on being in fit spiritual condition, and we are responsible for that. And so they go on to show us, you know, page 63, we've abandoned ourselves to God, and now they're telling us on page 85 with a new consciousness of the presence of God that we can maybe now say, God, what's your vision for what I'm going to do today? How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done. These are thoughts which go with us constantly, and we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. So in a matter of 22 pages, we've gone from abandoning ourselves utterly, offering everything up, and now if we are conscious of the presence of God, we will experience this thing called inspiration. And then there's a word. So part of my 11th step for years was doing the evening review questions on page 86. And a lot of people think that the evening review questions on 86 are actually the 10th step. We continue to take a personal inventory, and when wrong, promptly admitted it. But this is a walking around inventory. In its essence, it's the way I'm stay conscious of the presence of God, because I'm watching. Like today, the 10 steps, not so much watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. They come up, they crop up on a regular basis. But I'm trying to remember God as often as possible. Because in the back of the book, in the Spiritual Experience Appendix, it says most of us believe, and I'm not going to quote it from memory, I'm just going to read it to you. It's on page 567. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves, awareness is focus, attention, is the essence. Essence is the central point, the essence of the spiritual experience. That's what it says. And you know, my reading comprehension turns that into, I need to think about it like that. The main spiritual experience I can have today is thinking about God. Like being in union with this power, like it's here, it's now. All the traditions talk about this, and so I wrote Evening Review for years. From the time I was about a year and a half sober, I think until I was like 5 or 6 years sober, I've got spiral notebook after spiral notebook after spiral notebook of Evening Review questions, and then I walked away from it. I was going through a period of time where my ex-wife. You know, I would come home after being at a meeting or with a sponsee or at work all day, and I'm going to go down into the basement, and I'm going to sit and do my evening review, pray, and meditate. And so I was gone all day, and she had a problem with that. All right, and so I went to my sponsor, and I went to my spiritual advisor, and they both told me to set it aside. And it didn't come back. It's, you know, I still, to this day, don't do it a formal evening practice. But I'd started reading my big book again. I used to read 2 pages out of my big book as part of my 11th step, along with 84 to 88. And on November 5th, I celebrated 16 years, and I'm sitting in meditation, and I got this intuitive thought, God, start doing your evening review again. So now I do it every morning, and I've done it almost every morning since November 16th. And I also use the set-aside prayer before I read my big book, because it's amazing how you will see stuff in the big book that you swear, is this a new printing? Is the ink still wet? And I found one of those words, you know. It says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If you have carefully followed, I didn't know that word carefully was there. For all these years, if you have carefully followed directions, and Brandon did the wonderful image with the cheesecake. Precise instructions, clear-cut directions are in this book. You know, over and over they tell you, are you sold on the ideas in this book? It's almost like the circle and the triangle, right? Our three legacies, recovery, service, recovery, unity, and service. There are a lot of people I've observed over the years that will do a lot of fellowship, but their foundation, their recovery, has got a lot of holes and cracks in it, and they sponsor when it's convenient. And they find themselves in one part of a three-part program expecting the results of all three areas. And so the guys I work with, you know, I don't do it as much as I used to, but like, tell me what's going on with your circle and your triangle. The recovery is the mind. The mind goes into the recovery process. That's where we take it. And that's how we start to have a change in personality, a psychic change. Our bodies crave fellowship. That's why we bring our bodies to the meeting, so we can experience the fellowship that we crave and bond. That's why there was more bonding went on these past 2 days out there. That's where the bonding happens. Hopefully you guys experienced some of that. There's not bonding right now. You guys are listening to us. We're trying to inspire you guys. We're trying to get you to look at things from an entirely different angle. But that bonding, that body, the unity, man, that's such an important part of it. If you're traveling down a road and you're traveling with a group of like-minded people, what I mean by that, not that you work the steps the same way, not that you have the same opinions and ideas about everything in the program, but that you have a desire to walk the spiritual path. And at the center of that desire is a deep longing to experience whatever this thing called God is, and to be of service to other human beings. And to me, that's important. And if you're traveling down that road with a bunch of people that have the same initiative, you're not likely to get off that road. But if you're not traveling down that road with a bunch of people that have that similar mindset, it's dangerous. You'll get picked off by the wolf. And we have this other legacy called service, and that's how we feed our spirit. It gives us the first sense of purpose, guys, outside of getting high and having fun and partying, which is what all my 20s were about. The first real sense of purpose that I experienced was sponsorship. It was the first time where I was like, man, this really makes me feel like I'm being used. I am being used. And it has never left me. I started sponsoring when I was 4 months clean and sober and have never stopped. Outside of like a 2 or 3 month period years ago. And so we have the spirit, that we feed our spirit through service work. We carry our body into the fellowship, and we take our mind into the recovery process. And all of that culminates really into one thing: to carry the message to the alcoholic or addict who is still suffering. And through that, we grow spiritually, and then we have this devotional time and this 10th step that allow us to experience the consciousness of the presence of God. That is not my words there. It's on page 51 in our book. Page 51 says, to show how the change came over them, when many hundreds of people were able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact in their lives. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. I don't have to add any more words to it. Consciousness of the presence. To be conscious of something is to be aware of it. Presence means it's here and it's of God. So let's see what good old Tom has to say, Mr. Powers. For many spiritual teachers, spiritual teachers use a methodology of in a combination of watching. Oh, that was in our big book. Continual awareness of one's own life, moment by moment, and the practice of the presence of God, i.e., unwavering attention to God's grace and His will as they bear upon us from moment to moment, plus a patiently and diligently repeated act of abandonment to the divine providence in the exact circumstances of our daily life, from moment to moment. If we are looking for an easy way to experience God, and that's what the third step should have said. Not God as we understand God, but God as we experience God. The ease lies not in the absence of pain or trouble, but in the fact that pain and trouble and everything else are caught up into the deluge of God's love and mercy from moment to moment. You don't have to be a spiritual giant to do this. All you have to do is remember from moment to moment. You may not do it very often to begin with, but do it as often as you can. That is absolutely all that is required. But abandonment to the moment must be practiced and can only be practiced now. We must ask God what He wants of us now. We must ask Him for what we need now. We must open our eyes and our ears and our hearts to what he is telling us now. And so how do I prepare to attempt that practice? Because that's what the big book said in the 10th step. We watch, we ask, we turn, we stop fighting, we practice a code of love and tolerance. It's talking about addressing this now, in the moment. But I need to prepare for it, and that's what I do in my 11th step in the morning. You know, it says step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than us are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude. So what's the attitude? I got to think honestly about here. What is going on? Why am I doing this practice? So the way I think honestly every morning, when I sit for prayer and meditation, I ask myself two questions. Do I know why I'm about to do this practice? And I just sit and I see what comes up in my consciousness. After about 30 seconds to a minute, I ask myself a second question. Is my heart present to what I'm about to do? Or has this become a sanitized experience that's just a checklist that I'm scratching off? And I sit for 30 seconds to a minute before I go into my prayers. And I seldom, you know, like this morning I just sat and I did a gratitude list in my prayers. And then I just, each person that came in my mind, I said a prayer for them. That was it. I'm not praying. I don't want an outcome. I just, man, that just sets me up for disappointment. So I'm not going to mess with like wanting specific outcomes. It works if you have the proper attitude. Think honestly. Search diligently within yourself and lay aside prejudice. That's the attitude. It's from page 55 in our book. And so the other thing that came back on November 5th was the evening review, except in the manuscript, the original manuscript said, tomorrow when we awake, we review the day before. And so that's what I've been doing. I've been looking at these questions, and I've had some 10-step amends to go back and make. I see some things that I've identified that I've taken to my sponsor that I need to talk about. And I've identified some dishonesty around my job at work. And so it's just amazing how inspiration shows up. You know, and that's what it says that... If we have carefully followed directions, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him or her that has all knowledge and power. And so the 11th step, I mean, this is how I prepare to engage the practice of trying to remember God as often as possible. The 11th step each day, I feel like cleanses me for the day. I'm aware of what happened yesterday. If I need to go fix anything because I'm doing my evening review in the morning, I'm dialoguing with my higher power. I'm reading 84 to 88. I've got a few of these other books I got up here. These are the books I am currently working with. I read 2 pages out of each book, and then like this morning I did a 15-minute meditation. I try not to do less than 15. And I gave you examples of what can happen to Tarek an hour after he does prayer and meditation. That's pretty wild. Mark used to tell the story about, you know, spending his hour in prayer and meditation, and he'd get behind an old lady in the Starbucks line, and he wants to run her over because she's going too slow. You know, this is what I'm up against. Fascinating stuff here, folks. You can have some fun. You can take any one of these words and work with it indefinitely. All right? The 10th step is how I go into that quiet place within myself with a desire to bring it out into my activities. How can I bring this out into the real world so it's not theoretical anymore? It's actually practical. And all of this informs our 12th step. You know, as I work with guys, you know, my conception of God is going to bleed into how I sponsor people. It's going to bleed into the conversations I have with people, just like Brandon. My conception is very different from Brandon, and there is not a person on this planet that I respect. There are guys I respect just as much as Brandon, but nobody I respect more than Brandon. And we have very different ideas about what God is, and we totally respect each other. And you know, these are the kind of people, man. The beautiful thing is when you surround yourself with people and you can talk about this idea of God and what you think it is, because we will never know. And you're not trying to prove the other person wrong. Guys, part of the spiritual path, if you're on a spiritual path, is having conversations about God. It's part of it. Meditation, contemplation, prayer and dialogue, comparing notes with other people that are trying to live a spiritual path. And we do all these things because it says having had a spiritual awakening as a result. And Brandon is probably going to talk about 10 and 11 as well. But, you know, for me, that's what this whole thing's about. You know, I have a debt to repay God, and I'm the only one that can pay that debt. You know, so my life, you know, Mark used to talk about our tombstones are going to have our birthday. Mine's October 12th, 1976, dash, November 5th, 2007. I got a second dash. Everybody sitting in this room right now has a second dash. Mark used to say, what are you doing with your dash? You want to get all your shit back? You want your status back? You want to be a member, upstanding member in society? Yeah, those are all byproducts of living this way of life, but those are also byproducts of just abstaining. Just abstaining from drugs and alcohol, you'll get most of that back. To me, it's about much more than that. You know, I feel like there's one that's coming after me, and it's going to find me. It's going to find everybody in this room, and that thing's called death. That entity is called death. And so what if this whole thing here called life is about preparing for that moment? You know, I witnessed my dad's death. I took care of him. I didn't get to talk about it this weekend, but I rebuilt a relationship with that man, and I fell in love with that man who beat me, who threatened the family, who physically abused everyone in the family. I became him. He was alcoholic, violent alcoholic, and I took care of him, and I watched, he and I were clean. I just sat and witnessed his transition, made a nice little, you know, place, a room where he could transition. I played music for him, I meditated next to him, I had my prayer beads, and I would just sit. I wanted to create some energy for him. But I saw I saw what was happening around his sisters and his cousins and the regret of the past. I don't want that. I want to be clean when I pass. And I pray by the grace and mercy of God that I know it's coming. And so that's why it took me 8.5 years to make all those approaches. All those people that I had to say, hey, I hurt you. Would you be willing to sit down with me so we can talk about it? And a lot of them didn't want to see me. Right, but a lot of them did see me, and it's freedom. You know, Mark used to say, other people say it, if you want relief, you can get relief here. If you don't want to get well, trust me, you'll have a bunch of company here that's not getting well. But if you want to be free, that's available too. And so that's what those 8.5 years were for, because now I'm going to be clean, God willing, when that moment occurs. And I do believe that the greatest gift that God ever gave me was my recovery. Greatest gift I've ever received from God is my recovery. You know, and what I do with my recovery is my gift back to God. And I hope, I truly pray and hope that God is as pleased with my gift to Him as I am with His gift to me. All right. I really appreciate all of you being here this weekend. Thank you so much. Oh, and real quick before, Ben's gone, but he had a great deal to do with putting this thing on. Mr. Dillon, you know, he is a spearhead for God's ever-advancing creation. All you guys that helped set this thing up. Mr. Scott, there's not enough I can say about you, brother. Just beautiful person all the time. Just being of service, like a true servant. Thank you so much. And anybody else that had anything to do with, you know, helping us put this thing on, and for me and Brandon being here, thank you so much.
An alcoholic, my name's Brandon. Right. So what's the point of the steps and getting sober and all that, all this stuff? What's the point? It's, if you got a book, you can look on page 60. If you count down 5 lines, the first 3 words on that page say, the point is. And then it says we were willing to grow along spiritual lines, or to grow along spiritual lines. So the purpose of all of what we're doing here is to grow along spiritual lines, be it life or the steps or anything else, right? So are you accomplishing the point, or are you just doing that mediocre thing? Just getting by. You know, it's fun listening to Tarek talk about steps 10 and 11, and I think enough time has passed since I had this realization, so I can talk about it now. About 2 years ago, the 10th step was a very mechanical thing for me, and it was like, I'm watching, what am I watching for? Watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Check, check, check. Pray when that crops up. Discuss it with someone. Make amends quickly. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And, you know, I've been doing these workshops with Tarek for a number of years, and he talks about it every time. And it was just like, it was like one of the times during a session, the thought hit me of, am I watching for God in the 10th step? Now he talks about it. I sit next to him while he talks about it, and it never had occurred to me of, oh, I don't do that. I don't watch for God. But I didn't want to talk about it for a while because it made me seem like I was missing a bunch of it. But now that like a couple years have passed, I can say, well, yeah, this, you know, I've been doing it for a couple years. So it doesn't sound so bad. But so last night you heard a buddy of mine, his alarm go off in the middle of one of our sessions. And the purpose of that is he called me one time and he said, I feel like I'm just on autopilot and I'm like going through my day and I'm not like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, well, let's set an alarm for every other hour to go off. And when that alarm goes off, I just want you to meditate on what you're doing right now. And he did this amazing thing, which rarely happens, is he actually did it. Because normally I'll give advice like that to people and they're like, oh yeah, cool, all right. And then like, I'll ask them, so how's that going? And, what are you talking about? It's like, oh, okay. So actually following directions. And then another, I think it was another buddy that's in this room, he was wanting to explore a little bit more of steps 10 and 11. So he called Tarek and asked about steps 10 and 11. And then he called me and I said, did you already talk to Tarek? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, yeah, he makes that thing sound like it's impossible to do. So, like, be careful. Because, like, that's to accomplish his discipline and what he's doing. That, like, the guy is, he's sometimes like a robot, mechanical in the way that he does this. And so I'm much more free-flowing in the way that I do mine, and I explain all that. And so the thing that the more that I'm here and the more that I try to explore this relationship with whatever this power is, consciousness, the definition of conscious is being awake and aware. So am I awake and aware to the presence of whatever this presence is? And if I'm not awake and aware, then I'm walking around sleepwalking thinking I'm awake. And so for me, what this journey is about is becoming more effective in communicating with whatever that power is and with the people in my life. Because I fancy myself this great communicator, and my wife will often point out to me of like, yeah, that's going on in your head, and you think you know what that, the we understand what that is, but like, you never said that. And it's like, and so, like, an effective 10th and 11th step is sometimes communicating to other people your needs and wants and not as if you need them to do anything different. Now, there are times where it's important to work with another person, especially if you're in a relationship with them, and talk about things like intimacy and how that shows up. And I was a person that in the relationship I was always initiating. And one time I asked her, I was like, hey, could you maybe initiate our intimacy a little bit more? And she said, well, what does that look like? And I said, I just want you to initiate it more. And she's like, well, what does that mean? I was like, okay, well, do you think you initiate it 1 out of 10 times? And she's like, no. And I'm like, 1 out of 20? And she's like, no. And I'm like, 1 out of 50? Maybe. And I'm like, okay, more than that then, right? Whatever that is, more. And it turned into this actually really intimate thing where we talked about some other things, and we talked about how to engage. And I bring that up because it's like, how often are you having that kind of conversation with whatever that presence is in your life? How often are you sitting there and talking to whatever you call God and saying, hey, how can I have a deeper experience with you? And so you will get answers. They may not seem logical to you, but I've had a very rigorous prayer and meditation life. For the first 6 years of my sobriety, I had a morning discipline that I was at least 5 times a week, if not more. I was writing my evening review out. I was writing my plans for the day. I was doing all the things. And then it just disappeared for a while. And I started having this experience with meditation over the course of the day and doing things and being awake and aware to what's going on inside of me to understand how what's going on inside of me is affecting how I interact with other people. Last night in between sessions, I knew I was low energy, and I would go outside and I would walk and I would try to focus my energy. After I ate earlier, I went to the car and took a 15-minute nap because that's what I needed. And I'm paying attention to these things. The crazy thing is the more that I've like gotten back into a workout routine is the awareness of what's going on in my body has increased. So are you treating your body like a temple? Would you walk in a temple and crap on the floor? Were you taking care of it? Are you doing these things that you need to do to ensure that there's no energy within you that's blocking you from the experience of whatever God is? So the book, on pages 19 and 20, it puts this feat out there that seems like it's impossible when you're new. Bottom of 19, it says, most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. Well, Tarek talked about that we're selfish and self-centered. So how do I get to that place? How do I get to a place where I'm trying to focus on other people and meet their needs? And it takes us through this theme of usefulness over and over again in this book. Page 52, where it talks about the bedevilments and the fact that we were having trouble with personal relationships, you think? Couldn't control our emotional natures. We were being preyed upon by misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We couldn't either earn money or do things that brought us enjoyment. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy, right? But when we saw other people, like maybe Tarek and Brandon, solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, maybe you need to stop doubting the power of God. Maybe your ideas don't work. Maybe the God idea does. So how do I deepen that relationship? How do I get to a place where I can do that? And in the seventh step, in the prayer, it says, I pray now that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. So that prayer is about becoming more useful. And then we already talked about how that seventh step, it ties into steps 8 and 9, and how my amends increase my usefulness, not only to the person that I'm making the amends to, but to future people that might have to make that same amend. And then that increases my ability to practice steps 10 and 11. And the where usefulness shows up is when you start working with others. And when both you and the new man walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress, if you persist in this experience, remarkable things will happen. When you look back at your life, you will realize that the things which came to pass when you put yourself in God's hands were far better than anything you could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So it's talking about the fact that I need to go and start participating in this thing called sponsorship, because the things that will happen when I sponsor is I will start to see things in other people that I don't know is going on in me. Remember, back in the earlier in the book, it says, "What alcoholic that's properly armed with facts about himself can generally win the confidence of another alcoholic." This isn't a few hours. It takes me about one story, and I got a guy connected with me. But the reason why I can get a guy connected with me if he's alcoholic is because I know what drove me. And I know what drove me because I've looked at my experience. I've sat across from enough guys and done enough fifth steps and received enough 10-step calls to know that we're not that different. We're driven by the same things. We're driven by the same fears. We're driven by the same resentments. There's hardly a time where a guy calls me on a 10th step and I go, I don't have that. I'm sorry. No, I'm never selfish and I'm never thinking only about myself ever. Call somebody else. Can't help you. But there are times where I can't, and I'll say, hey, you know what? This guy has that experience. Call him. But the only reason why I can connect those experiences is because I'm actually out there doing this thing, and I'm actually helping people and communicating and practicing these principles in all my affairs. And I'm having an experience with other alcoholics and drunks, alcoholics and addicts that have had these experiences. And I know who's had the experience, and I know who can be helpful to them because I'm actually doing this thing. I put myself in a place of service where I'm able to service the people around me. Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is a thing of supreme value in life. It's a conditional statement. That is true only if one is willing to turn past to good account. We grow. Oh, wait, that was the whole point of like everything, right? The point is we are growing, right? We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. That sounds like the 9-step promise is coming back, doesn't it? The alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it is almost the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families, not just alcoholics, but their families, still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. So if you owe something to someone and you don't give it back, what's another way that we can describe that experience?
Stealing,
yeah, which makes you a thief. If you've had this experience, you've gone through the steps, somebody's transmitted a message to you, and you have not done the same, thief. And when the occasion requires each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So I start to understand and experience this thing called usefulness. Now, I don't know if I can sit up here and pound on the table and say that if you don't sponsor, you're not going to stay sober. I've seen people not sponsor and stay sober. I don't know what their internal condition is and how satisfied they are with their life. I can report to you that I've got the greatest life possible for me. You guys may not want it. You may not want hogs and goats and ducks and chickens and live in the middle of nowhere, but I do. And you may not want to receive 10 or 20 or 30 phone calls a day from alcoholics, but I do. And I enjoy that. And I enjoy most of those conversations. Some of them not so much, but and I enjoy coming to these things and seeing people that are willing to drive from Kentucky to come here and have this experience, and people that are willing to drive from Atlanta and come here, and people that get excited about recovery, because I was that guy when I got here. 90 days in, when I went to that retreat and I had that experience where it transformed the course of my existence. There's people in this room that are having that experience right now. The lights are coming on for them. They're starting to wake up to the possibility of what Spirit can do in their life. Nothing gets me more excited than watching that experience. And then after you've been here for a little while, you get to experience this paragraph, which says, those of us who have spent much time in the world of the spiritual make-believe, okay, so like I got so geeked out on getting down the spiritual path that I started doing all sorts of trainings and exercises and learning who to meditate and following gurus and doing all this stuff, and I went way out there, right? And then I thought about for a little while of maybe not coming back and just staying out there. But what happened is that even these people that are doing these spiritual trainings and teachings and not learning about all this stuff, the thing that I realized that was a consistent thread is that the people that were in recovery that were doing them had a different level of awareness and honesty to self. And that, yes, there's some people that can do some magical stuff in spirit world, but they didn't have that like ability to actually walk among other people and communicate that experience. And so what happened is it brought me back to the rooms. It brought me back to the experience of working with others, because there's not a whole lot of places you can go where people show up right for a ready-made spiritual experience, other than the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Drug Addicts Anonymous. So what happened is I eventually saw the childishness of it. And then what happened is this dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in my life. I came to believe that God wants me to keep my head in the clouds with him or it or her or whatever it is, but that my feet ought to be firmly planted on earth, because that's where my fellow travelers are and that's where my work must be done. These are the realities for me. I found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. Is because what I have found is that the longer I stay on this path and the more useful I become, is not only does it become this really fun thing to watch the transformation of other people's lives is I think that it kind of also does this thing too where, like, if the universe is deciding on whether or not I get to stay sober or not versus somebody else. Let's say they need one more guy to relapse, one more guy to be an example. But the universe says, you know what? That guy's pretty useful right now doing what he's doing. And I'm probably going to stick around. But if I stop being useful and I stop trying to carry this message and I stop trying to help people and I get all self-absorbed and self-consumed, then maybe not. So for me, it's not even like a fear of if I don't sponsor, if I don't continue to work with others that I'm going to drink. It's like I kind of like the experience. I kind of like the experience of being useful. And my wife years ago accused me of doing it for ego. And I spent some time meditating on that. And I'm like, well, maybe so. Maybe my ego does get fed by the fact that guys that I'm sponsoring get out there and turn into powerful sponsors. But it kind of brings me back to the question that I asked at the beginning of, like, are you striving for mediocrity? Or are you striving to be the best that you possibly can be? And if my desire to be the best possible sponsor, the greatest sponsor that ever lived, is egomania, do people benefit from that? Do people benefit from the fact that I get to sit up here and be the center of attention, act like I know what I'm talking about? It seems like it does because it's reported back to me that it does. And then you get the experience that, well, I wasn't even party to the experience. It was reported to me. So those of you that were here last year know that not, you know, like 3 months prior to last year's workshop, my dad fell and broke his neck, and there was a whole experience with that that was going on. And for me to even be here last year kind of felt like it was a big ask, and it was a big give to be here in this with you. But there's a lot of little neat experiences that came out of that. And one of them is this guy, it's a plumber in Noonan that I know. I asked him to come up because I trusted the guy, and I felt like he was a solid plumber, and we had to convert a room in my parents' house to a handicap restroom, so he came up and he was helping me with the plumbing. I was doing a bunch of the other work, and when he came back to install the fixtures at my parents' house, he was having a conversation with my parents. And he was telling my mom that about all the people that I help and the fact that I sacrifice my time to put on workshops and that I sponsor a bunch of people and I'm effective and I'm useful to a lot of people. And he has this whole conversation with my mom where she's kind of a little bit blown away. And so the next time I'm over at my parents' house, my parents ask me about it. And they say, so, you know, Tom told us that you do all this stuff. And I said, yeah. And she goes, why don't you ever tell us about it? And I'm like, well, Mom, I don't know how to answer that. Like, hey, Mom, I'm a pretty big deal. And people will sacrifice time out of their weekend to come and sit and listen to me talk about stuff. And I was just like, I don't know how to tell you about that, Mom. And she's like, well, can you try it? I'm like, well, what do you want to know? And she's just like, what do you do? And I said, well, you know, I do this and I do that. And I guess she didn't feel like it was enough of an answer. So she talked to my wife about it. And my wife kind of expanded on it. And it, guys, I don't know why I sit up here. I don't know why I'm willing to do all the things that I do, except for the fact that I like the effect produced. And that it is my desire to not just sit up here and give you guys an adequate presentation of what the spiritual path looks like. I want to get you excited about this. I want to get you excited about what could happen if you actually followed these steps and did them all the way through, including sponsorship and carrying the message and all that stuff. I hope I've done that, but if I haven't, well, I mean, I'll try to do better. I'll try to be less mediocre next time. But what if you took that attitude? What if you started to maybe start aiming for something a little bit higher than just average? Maybe aim for like really good, or even complete and total awesomeness. What would your life look like? Mine's the greatest life possible for me. It's not perfect every day, and there's a lot of things that don't go my way, and there's times where I still forget to give you the script that you're supposed to follow to be in my play, and I experience some negativity around that, and sometimes I clean it up, and sometimes I'm resistant to cleaning it up and eventually clean it up later. But like, that's what we're talking about here, guys, is just doing something different that you've never done, to have an experience that you've never had. And if that doesn't sound cool, well, I don't know what else to tell you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.